This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
Discover the extraordinary fragrance Ariana Grande R.E.M. Cherry Eclipse. Delight in black cherry jubilee, sugared honeysuckle, marshmallow meringue, and glowing amber. Get the perfect fragrance. Ariana Grande's R.E.M. Cherry Eclipse, exclusively at Ulta Beauty.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th back in Manhattan. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's been an exciting week. We have a lot on our tap this hour, including Senator Steve Daines is going to be joining us. We got a new proposal to end the shutdown, longest in history. I'm not optimistic. Special thanks to everyone I had a chance to meet and talk to at the Patriot Awards last night, but we're back in action now, so let's get to the big three.
Number three.
There's a lot of countries that have diplomatic relations with one another. The Abraham Accords is a partnership. The strength of it is to have majority Muslim countries, the Jewish state, able to partner on things to show the world that it is possible.
Score another for the Abraham Accords as Kazakhstan normalized relations with Israel. While President Trump's massive push for rare earth plays a major role in this deal to begin with, I'll explain.
Number two.
That is why I want you, my fellow San Franciscans, to be the first to know. I will not be seeking re-election to Congress.
Great. That is the best news I've heard in quite some time. She's just 85. Goodbye, old guard. Say farewell to their expired Speaker Nancy Pelosi. As it becomes clear, they are ready to go way left in the future.
Number one.
I think we're getting closer. I mean, what I'm hearing is you have Democrats who are eager to move beyond this and are moving closer towards accepting what John Thune actually offered more than a month ago.
Really, shutdown, meltdown. Another attempt today to try and end the longest shutdown in history as Dems dig in because they think the massive disruption delivered them success on Tuesday. And today, the unrelated note, the president of Hungary will be at the White House, and the president of Hungary will be meeting with the president, and they'll be talking about international affairs. But the big story is, will we ever get the government opened up? Senator Steve Daines joins us now. Senator, are you... Oh, I'm sorry, he's coming up at the bottom of the hour. So, the offer from Senator Thune, which, by the way, very similar to what they offered earlier, as you just heard. He is going to say he's going to guarantee a future vote on Obamacare subsidies, the ones that were put in place to expire when the pandemic was over. So the pandemic is over and they expired, and they accuse Republicans of cutting Obamacare subsidies. But the deal hinges on Democrats who are divided right now on reopening the government. You heard the rumor on Monday, confirmed, that there were at least six Democrats looking to cross the aisle and end the shutdown. That means no more delays when it comes to air travel. That means people actually get paychecks. That means that you could actually go shopping over the weekend or go out to dinner. If you are somebody that works at TSA, for the most part, these are people that you can't just miss two or three paychecks. So the GOP, Thune said over a conference lunch yesterday, that he's going to hold another vote today, hoping that by agreeing to pay the VA, get funds for agriculture, a short-term extension for the rest of the government until January, that would be enough. But sadly, many people feel, although that offer is usually what the majority would get away with in order to continuing or have a continuing resolution, it doesn't look like that. Senator Kennedy came out and basically was kind of down on that notion. Cut six.
I watched this weekend where some of my colleagues said, oh, we'll be out of the shutdown by Thursday, by Friday. They were very confident. So I entered the week optimistic. And some of my Republican colleagues are meeting with the Democrats. I mean, in fact, most members of the Senate are running around like ants in a sugar bowl, like a bunch of headless chickens. But we're, in my opinion, we're nowhere near getting out of the shutdown.
Because Democrats feel like they're benefiting from it. They said, hey, by standing up to Republicans, we did so good in the off-year elections in Virginia, in New Jersey, and New York City. Yeah, okay, you did really good. All right. So you read the continuous shutdown instead of saying, I'm going to continue to push for, I don't know, Roe v. Wade. I'm going to continue to push for Obamacare subsidies. They're going to continue just to have a shutdown because they think the polls will reflect in the election results that the Republicans are getting blamed for this on affordability. You look at listen to Senator Richard Blumenthal and Ron Johnson. Listen to, first off, I'll just bring you to here, Senator Richard Blumenthal, the ranking member, by the way, on the debate on Obamacare, which obviously there's people that's getting Obamacare that are not eligible for it. They get in Medicaid that shouldn't be eligible for it. People 400% above the poverty line getting subsidized health care. Cut 14.
Let's be very clear why we're here. It is a Republican effort to destroy the Affordable Care Act. We are seeking to extend the health care tax credits past the end of the year. It is a broader, relentless, calculated campaign to repeal the law that underlies those tax credits.
Can we just put a pause? It's what he's saying he knows is total fiction. There was a big push in the president's first term, in Barack Obama's every year since he passed it, 7 years. Everybody wanted to overturn Obamacare, and it wasn't the thumbs down from John McCain ended it. Nobody's tried to repeal Obamacare since. They're the ones who put it in place on purely Democratic votes. They're the ones that keep supplementing it to keep it alive. This is a dead healthcare program that's unaffordable that was supposed to reduce costs. Nobody's trying to kill Obamacare. They weren't running on it. They're not trying to do it. The subsidies were put in because we had a global pandemic and nobody was working, and healthcare was a huge issue, obviously, in utter definition. So him saying that just shows, I don't even want to hear the rest of what he has to say, but that's what they're running on. They believe that message came across. Byron York, cut 13.
I think one of the big problem here is Democrats are filibustering the bill that would reopen the government. When Republicans negotiate with them, those Republicans raise the prospect of Democrats being rewarded for shutting down the government. In past shutdowns, when Democrats were the ones playing hardball, they said to Republicans, open the government first, and then we'll talk about your issues. Now we have these negotiations going on, and the latest reports are that Democrats believe they can get some more if they keep talking and keep the government shut down even longer.
Pretty crazy. So the other big issue, the other big story yesterday was Nancy Pelosi, 85 years old, been around for 120 years in Congress. The former speaker is going to leave, right? So she's done. But it didn't stop her from just saying irresponsible things. I think the more I think about it, the more I look at it, the more I read about it, what her career has been, all it does is try to threaten Democrats to do what she wants. She never reached across the aisle, did anything bipartisan or significant. Her big thing is like all Democrats. They like gender identity. They like the first woman, the first black, the first Hispanic, the first this, the first that. You know, you land on the moon, not the first white guy on the moon. We're past all that. She's known for doing all that. She's the first woman. Congratulations. It's noteworthy. Move on. But instead, she went ahead and just did a good job consolidating her own caucus, ripped up the president's speech, constantly baiting and trying to impeach the president on every chance. Here's what she said 2 days ago. Cut 19.
How can I say this? It'll sound like I'm awful about Trump because he's just a vile creature. The worst thing on the face of the earth. But anyway.
You think he's the worst thing on the face of the earth?
I do. Yeah, I do.
Just ridiculous. So Trump, when he heard she's retiring, returned the favor. Cut 20.
I think she's an evil woman. I'm glad she's retiring. I think she did the country a great service by retiring. I think she was a tremendous liability for the country. I thought she was an evil woman who did a poor job, who cost the country a lot in damages and in reputation. I thought she was terrible.
Yeah, she was. Remember, she goes and visits Syria when George Bush was leaving office in his last year, caused quite an uproar, wanted to meet with Assad. Nice. Then she just blasts her way into Taiwan, just blowing up international relations of Joe Biden's administration. Remember that? Then all of a sudden it broke off China relations. She didn't, you know, I'm all for visiting Taiwan, but you think you'd have a little bit more experience than that to know how to do it? And remember, this is her. This is how everyone wants to say nice things about her. I think she hurt the country in every way. If she helped herself, my goodness, the insider trading story where people say they did the trades of Nancy Pelosi and they became millionaires like her, what she did to her wealth while she was in Congress and saying her husband was wealthy. Cut 21. Nancy's greatest.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
He's impeached forever, no matter what he says or whatever headlines he wants to carry around.
You know, make America, you know, this hat, make America white again.
You really don't know what you're talking about right now. This is like giving you a bowl of doggy do, put a cherry on top and call it a chocolate sundae.
Why did you refuse the National Guard on January 6th?
Shut up. Scapegoat. You know what a scapegoat is? They get a goat and they heap all of the ills onto the goat and then they run the goat out of town.
She's just the worst, right? I mean, just an angry. This is her like a few months ago, just a reporter asked her a question. Shut up. That's your answer. So now this party's going to move even more left. There's no guiding principle. Hakeem Jeffries is no leader. All he says is rhetoric that no one listens to. And remember, AOC is going to step up. The squad's never been, never been so empowered. Senator Bernie Sanders basically called out Schumer minutes before Schumer's press conference is about to start. They're going to have a civil war. That's what's going to be the theme over the next few months. And good luck. Even before they take the stage for the presidency and they get to, as we sprint to the midterms, you're going to see the contradictory philosophies on the left before they even get to the right. When we come back, I'll take some calls, 1-866-408-7669. Also, the expansion of the Abraham Accords. Saudi Arabia, they said more countries to come. Is it Saudi Arabia coming next week or in 2 weeks, the Syrian president? You don't move.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete. Not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There's a lot of countries that have diplomatic relations with one another. The Abraham Accords is a partnership. It's an enhanced relationship beyond just diplomatic relations and having embassies in each other's capitals. It is, and it's not just with Israel, it's with all the other countries that are part of the Accord. You're now creating a partnership that brings special and unique economic development on all sorts of issues that they can work on together. So that's really the benefit of it, and the strength of it is to have majority Muslim countries, the Jewish state, able to partner on things to show the world that it is possible.
And I know like you're listening at home and you're thinking, what do I care about Kazakhstan? You should. Because what do we know 2 weeks ago when China decides we're not going to sell rare earth to America or the world? Really, you locked up 70% of it. You're not going to sell it. Well, why is that? Well, because it's called leverage. We allowed China. We were literally dominating in the 90s with rare earth. We allowed China to mine it. Environmentalists just destroyed it. And negligence, GM and others, just allowed their plants to close. And we're making batteries elsewhere. And now cell phones boom. And you need that for weapons. And China goes, oh, yeah, I got it. We're going to cut it off. Part of the thing that Trump is doing is trying to get our own rare earth, use it at home, but also cut deals with Argentina, cut deals with Malaysia, and cut deals with Australia, where rare earth is there, Cambodia, where rare earth is there. And guess where else it is? In the stands, Kazakhstan. And guess who's rattling the cages of the stands? Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Kazakhstan. Russia. They're looking to get them back into their hemisphere, into their influence, their sphere of influence. So the president gets them too. He goes, you can sign up for the Abraham Accords. I'm going to do a deal for rare earth. You like that? I'll mine it. We'll share it. I'm going to pay for it. And then number two is we're going to, our presence will stop any type of invasions and infiltration from this place called Russia. I think it's great. They're also talking about, as I mentioned before, Syrian leaders coming in 2 weeks. You better also tell the Syrian leader, cut off relations with Russia. They killed half your guys, barrel bombing wildly. And now you're going, just like they bomb cities and kindergartens, now you're going to cut a deal with them, kick them out, number one. Number two, recognize Israel, as well as have trade relations with them. And by the way, they might as well do it. And number two is the MBS. I don't think we're ready yet. That the big win would be getting Saudi Arabia involved in the Abraham Accords. One of the reasons we found the documentation Hamas did what they did October 7th is to derail any talks of the Abraham Accords and the massive recognition of Israel. So it's a big deal. J.D. Vance talked about it. Cut 31.
I think the diplomatic significance is that it gives great momentum to the Abraham Accords. And to recap for those those who are listening who don't appreciate, the Abraham Accords, of course, is the historic agreement struck by the president in the first term to rebuild the alliance structure and the relationships between Israel and a number of the majority Muslim countries in that region of the world. What the president has done is actually signaled that the momentum of the Abraham Accords is alive and well in the second administration. I think it's not just going to be Kazakhstan, but also a number of other countries that join in the months to come. So it's a great signal, a great act of friendship, and a great sign that the Abraham Accords is alive and well.
I think so, too. It took a lot of work. The president put on Truth Social. I just had a great call between Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel and the president of Kazakhstan. So that's pretty cool. Gary, you're in Daytona. Gary.
I'll make it quick, Brian. I appreciate taking the call. What scared me the most, and usually I don't get that way over the elections this past week, the Attorney General in Virginia, the complacency on the people of Virginia. Even if you don't go out and vote for Winston Merle Sears, you have to pull the lever and not allow that to happen. And, I mean, and it's unbelievable that that came in that way. It bothered me the most of any of the elections that occurred. And the other thing was
the AG race,
Attorney General race. Exactly. What bothered me, what's fantastic.
So I'll answer your question. I talked to a prominent Democrat and I said, the thing I don't get most is the margin of victory for Mikey Sherrill. And the other thing is the AG race. What is going on? And they said the perception among Democrats and independents, for this is what their analysts say, is that they feel as though Pam Bondi is so political as an AG. I don't feel that way, but political as an AG. What's the big deal if you put somebody that has some character flaws as AG in Virginia? At least it won't be the Republican talking points. So that's what they thought on that. And we'll see. I also thought James Blair was very candid in his comments today, assistant chief of staff for Donald Trump. They said, what are the GOP lessons from the off-year election? He said, focus, don't panic. Win the spending argument. Share paycheck. Focus on people's paychecks, prices, and then argue for what is going on. The New York Post writes that Trump's making a mistake. It says, and by the way, it's the Wall Street Journal that's anti-tariff. It's not the New York Post. So, and for the most part, they're very supportive of the president. But they said, whatever you do, Mr. President, don't tell everybody the prices are down when they're not. That's what Joe Biden did. And It was disrespectful to your audience. You're too smart for that. Admit it. Bananas are up. No question. We saw bananas are up. We see the meat is up. You know what's down? Gas is down. So you know what's down? Inflation's down. It's down to 3%. Got to get it to 2. Got it. Do you know there are 2,000 different items on Walmart? The prices went down, but overall price went up 5.3%. See, this is what I'm working on. This is what I plan on doing. Got eggs down. Just haven't gotten beef down. And we're working on that. I would go point by point. I'm on top of it. I know what's going on. I'm working it. And then people say, you're in. What if your home security could stop a break-in before it even begins? That's not science fiction. That's SimpliSafe. And right now, their early access Black Friday sale is changing how we think about protection. Traditional systems wait until someone's already breaking in. SimpliSafe's Active Guard outdoor protection, powered by AI, detects threats before they reach your door. Real security agents jump in instantly, confronting intruders, letting them know they are on camera and the police are on their way. And if needed, setting off sirens and spotlights. It's proactive protection that stops crime before it happens. And here's the best part. No long-term contracts, no hidden fees, and you can cancel anytime. It's been named Best Home Security System by U.S. News & World Report for 5 years straight. And with a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try completely risk-free. So, if home safety's been on your mind, this is your moment. Right now, my listeners can take advantage of their biggest sale of the year with this exclusive early access to SimpliSafe's Black Friday sale. And save 60% on any new system by going to simplisafe.com/Brian. There will never be a better time to get real security for your home. Go to simplisafe.com/Brian. Stay protected and stay one step ahead with SimpliSafe.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
John Thune is divorced from reality. I mean, it's a clown show over in the Senate. 14, 15 times, you bring the same partisan Republican spending bill to the Senate floor, expecting a different result. That's the classic definition of legislative insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over again, has no ability to actually negotiate in good faith. And this has gone on week after week after week.
He thinks you're stupid. I mean, he thinks Democrats and Republicans are stupid. They think that he's going to actually tell people that the Republicans are talking about a spending bill. It's a continuing resolution on the spending levels that Joe Biden set up. What is wrong with you? And then talk about a clown show because people have crossed the aisle. We're hoping as a country that more do so the country can open up and you can continue negotiating. Senator Steve Daines joins us now from Montana. So, Senator, Hakeem Jeffries, not even stating the argument he has.
Brian, that was tough to listen to.
He always is.
He is, but this year, that is absolutely a 100% blatant lie. The truth is this continuing resolution is not partisan. It is what they call clean. It's a bridge that funds the government for a period of time. In this case, it's November 21st until we can sort out the appropriation process, which, by the way, are bipartisan appropriations. And it's the same exact clean continuing resolution that Democrats voted on 11 times, yes, under Joe Biden's watch. And it's the same continuing resolution that Chuck Schumer would have voted on last March, where the far left took his head off because they didn't want to see him cooperating. So that's just absolutely a lie. It's nice to be able to set the record straight, Brian, on your show.
So, absolutely. So, Senator Thune, in a short time, is going to offer the bill looks a little bit different than the continuing resolution. He said, it looks like Democrats are going to block it. It says, guarantees a future vote on Obamacare subsidies, which, by the way, went into play to expire because of the pandemic. But the fate of the deal hinges on Democrats who are now divided. Many want to reopen the government, but more want the progressive to refuse to budge so they can continue to build momentum from their election victories. Do you think that they think that Republicans are being blamed? So the longer it goes, the worse it is for you?
No, I think they do. Chuck Schumer and his leadership, they just said, and I will quote them, compromise now could damage the Democrat brand. Sadly, Brian, the Democrats care more about their brand now than American suffering. I'll tell you, when you see these 10% flight reduction that Secretary Duffy is initiating, and he needs to do that to protect the flying public. But as this cascades across airports in America today, tomorrow, through the weekend, right before we come into Thanksgiving, the busiest travel week of the year, this is having severe ramifications for the American people. And frankly, it's compromising safety.
So what do you think about the new proposal, the test vote that's going to go out today? The punch bowl says Democrats are going to reject it.
Yeah, I don't know if Leader Thune will then even put it on the floor. If the Democrats are going to reject it, I'm not sure Leader Thune will even put it on the floor. We're going to wait and see. But there was some momentum growing to get these 5 to 10, I'll call them the common sense caucus of the Democrats that will break from Chuck Schumer, side with us to do the right thing, to open up the government again and come back to the negotiating table, get appropriation bills done. And yes, we'll give the Democrats an up or down vote on extending these Biden bonus COVID subsidies that they love so much. But I don't know what's going to happen right now. If they're going to say no anyway, I'm not sure we'll even put the vote on the floor. Stay tuned on that.
Yeah, it should be interesting because then they will be voting not to fund the VA, not to fund the fund for the Agriculture Department, and not to have an extension into January on spending. And among the Republicans who don't want to vote for that is Senator Rand Paul. Does that surprise you?
Well, Rand generally will vote against NECR, but that's consistent with Rand since he's been here.
All right. So where do you go from here? So you're not – aren't you to hear what Senator Kennedy said yesterday? He is not optimistic. Here's cut 7.
The Democrats, supposedly we were told today at lunch that we're going to have a vote tomorrow and that the so-called moderate Democrats have come together and they're going to support us. I think they're still stamping their little feet. I don't believe they will support us. And I've never believed any of this stuff. Around here, it's not what you say, it's what you do that shows what you believe, and everything else is just cottage cheese.
And he went on to say he thinks it's going to last at least another 10 days. What do you think, Senator Daines?
Well, first of all, as I listened to my good friend John Kennedy there yesterday, we had to turn him into the weather forecast because he nailed it. That's exactly what happened. The Democrats were talking about joining us to get this passed today, and that flipped upside down late last night. And now we're hearing they're not going to support it. I hope that changes. I hope the fever breaks, Brian, for the sake of the country and the sake of the American people, the sake of our troops, the sake of the flying public, sake of those who depend on some of these benefits who are in great need, who are the down and out in our country. But I think John Kennedy nailed it, that we are not going to see cooperation today. And then I don't know what happens next. I hope that this fever will break, that the pressure will build on the Democrats. We are staying steadfast in our position. That is just do what we've always done here in Washington for many, many years, pass the clean CR, and let's get the appropriations passed. But remember, this, if you step back, this is not a coherent argument they're making. This is all about politics. It's all about saving Chuck Schumer's political career. It's all about creating chaos here because they hate President Trump. Mm-hmm. That is what this ultimately is about.
So I want to bring up the other thing. President Trump wants to solve this by nuking the filibuster. Are you somebody that wants to do that? Tom Tillis says you don't have the votes. Cut 10.
There's not enough to get the vote. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like I said yesterday, there are simply not enough members who are willing to vote on it. I can't imagine that the Democrats would. So I appreciate the president's frustration, and I don't even begrudge him asking to nuke the filibuster. He's in the executive branch. He's frustrated with a lot of the obstacles the Democrats are putting forward. There's simply not the votes to nuke the filibuster.
So we shouldn't. I don't think we should. Do you?
Yeah, no, I was with the president last night for dinner. I was with him for a couple hours. We had a wonderful dinner in the White House with some of the Central Asian presidents. I was there with J.D. Vance and Scott Bessent, Marco Rubio. And the president and I talked about this at length last night. The issue is exactly what Tom Tillis, Senator Tillis, said, and that is there simply aren't the votes. We have probably at least 5, 10, maybe 15 hard no Republicans that do not believe we want to nuke the filibuster because that just hands pass the keys over to the Democrats when they get control someday. Then they'll move forward with Puerto Rican statehood and D.C. statehood. They'll pack the Supreme Court. They will completely rip any state laws that put voter integrity requirements in place. So you can see the devastation Democrats will create if they take charge. And so because the votes aren't there, I think we need to look, pivot to find a different solution here to this this current impasse.
So James Carville is on the record saying saying that the Democrats will terminate the filibuster in the first hour that they take over power. And you know who else said that? Eric Holder did a lot of the redistricting himself. He says that they're going to look to put 13 Supreme Court justices on the court. They're going to look to immediately add two states. So that's what the Joe Biden tried to do, for goodness sakes. And now the James Carville is saying, you know, we're going to do this. The brand of the Republican brand is bad. We're going to win all three and we're going to nuke the filibuster. That's what the president hears and says, what are we waiting for?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a persuasive argument, frankly. I mean, I it's hard to disagree with the president making that argument. But the problem is that we have, you know, I'll call it 5 to 10 Republicans that simply want to protect the institution. I applaud their principle, and I know it frustrates the president right now, and I think the president's argument is persuasive. And frankly, I do believe what James Carville said, that they will nuke the filibuster if they ever control this place again, because they tried under Joe Biden's watch. They fell 2 votes short. That was Joe Biden and Kyrsten Sinema, and they're both no longer senators. So they have the vote to nuke the filibuster. But there are, again, 5 to 10 Republican senators that absolutely will not move on this issue. And that's why I think it's best we pivot away from this fight on the filibuster and stay focused here on getting the current problem resolved.
Senator Steve Daines, our guest. Senator, the other thing that's taking place now is the big push to get rare earth. We know China has the world over a barrel. That's what Kazakhstan's about, right? Not only is Russia trying to rattle their cages to get them back under their influence, but they have rare earth. This is part of the recognition, part of the multifaceted way the president approaches these deals.
Look, last night the president was playing chess, if we think about geopolitics, because he had all 5 Central Asian presidents in the White House with him. Historic. I was part of that dinner last night. There's an amazing picture. It was taken last night in front of the Central Asian country flags with the president standing, President Trump, right in the middle of these 5 Central Asian presidents. This is Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan. These are critical countries surrounded by Russia, China, Afghanistan, Iran, and they want to draw closer to the United States, rich in critical minerals, oil, and gas. It's time to get those flow of materials moving towards the West, towards the United States, away from China, away from Russia. This was a very important moment last night. It'll be underreported because I think
not here.
You'll do it, but many just, you know, don't realize what this means. But I can tell you what, this morning, it's a bad day for Xi Jinping, for Vladimir Putin, for the Ayatollahs in Iran, when you see the Central Asian countries now starting to move in the direction of the United States, key partners. Remember, they are key on counterterror mission as well. Think of the radicalization with ISIS, Khorasan, and others. These are great partners. They're great friends. It was a great dinner last night. These 5 presidents love President Trump. They absolutely had a wonderful dinner last night. I got to see it firsthand.
Did they express in the conversation about their worry about Russia?
Oh, yeah. There was quite a bit of talk about Vladimir Putin last night. And they all, of course, these are all former Soviet republics.
Yeah.
And many of them, you know, see Putin. Putin comes and sees them. And, of course, they have to be careful because that's the big bully neighbor they have to the north. But it was really, really helpful last night. And I tell you what, President Trump was autographing books for those guys. They just absolutely love President Trump. It was a great moment to watch. Wonderful to see those 5 former Soviet Republic countries, now independent sovereign countries, pushing forward for freedom and their independence, coming the direction of the United States. Great win again for President Trump.
Senator, you have an expertise in foreign relations. You're on that committee, obviously energy too. But when the president of Syria comes in 2 weeks, the first question we should have is, why are you letting Russia stay? They've been barrel bombing your people. And I know this president, former Al Qaeda. I'm not putting him in the Human Being Hall of Fame. But if they want us to recognize them, they can't do something. He went to Moscow already. Don't you think we have to put the hammer down on that?
He'll be here. In fact, he'll be here
2 weeks.
He's going to be here starting Sunday night. So he'll these will be great discussions. Look, he has got one of the toughest jobs in the world right now to be president of Syria, and it's important that he's here in Washington D.C. spending time with President Trump, spending time with U.S. senators, strengthening this relationship. He's between a rock and a hard place, and I think it's important that. That he's here, and we continue to have these discussions in terms of how do we continue to pivot Syria away from the chaos that Russia and the Iranians want to impose on Syria.
Do you think that they should join the Abraham Accords?
Oh, gosh, it'd be wonderful. Yeah, by the way, Kazakhstan, that was announced last night. Kazakhstan just joined the Abraham Accords.
No, I know. Yeah.
So it's wonderful. You know, another Muslim country here. That's called momentum. And, gosh, you know, the big prize certainly globally will be Saudi Arabia. But I think that's going to take some time here. But maybe by sometime next summer, maybe late spring, if we see Saudi Arabia come into the Abraham Accords, that deal was virtually teed up. I was with Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem just before the October 7th attack a couple years ago, and we were on the cusp of having Saudi Arabia join the Abraham Accords, and then, of course, the Iranians blew it up with the attack with Hamas, with that horrible terror attack.
And that was the intention. That was the intention.
Absolutely. They wanted to completely stop that, because if the only way you ever get long-term peace in the Middle East, of course, you've got to destroy Hamas, the cancer of the radical group that wants to wake up every morning and kill Jews. But what we've got to do is get Saudi Arabia as part of the Abraham Accords. That then gives other Arab nations some cover and legitimacy to keep moving forward here as it relates to recognizing Israel, the Jewish state of Israel, as a legitimate state.
And we know that they just impressed the whole world with their military. What they've done has just been crazy for the last 2 years between Lebanon and between what they did doing, taking out Iran's, along with us, Iran's nuclear program. Lastly, you understand rare earth. What is the reality between mining and refining this stuff and getting it out? And I heard one estimate that in 18 months, if we focus, we could be separate from China on rare earth. Is that possible with Australia, Cambodia, deal, all these deals that we're cutting?
Right. So, the president, I was there at the breakfast meeting with the Blair House here a couple weeks ago with the Australian Prime Minister when they announced that $5 billion deal, certainly in rare earths. Now, here's the problem. We'd love to see this short in the United States, but the permitting time and so forth to get new mines opened up, to get processes approved. Of course, it's more than just the mines. It's also the processing. We have these radical NGOs that will keep everything in the ground. They take everything to court. I've been working for 40 years in Montana to get a silver and copper mine permitted, which is state-of-the-art environmental standards. This is the problem we have with our own far-left activists who don't want to see this.
So in other words, Lee Zeldin can't handle that himself? It's got to go through?
Lee Zeldin, by the way, is a hero, and he is doing great things for this country. Thank God for his leadership at the EPA. But here's what we need to do. We need to have a two-pronged strategy. One certainly is push as quickly and aggressively here in the United States to develop those resources on our soil. But number two, make sure we friendshore to bring these trusted allies like the Australians, like Central Asia. Frankly, got Vietnam is rich in these minerals as well.
Okay.
And so we got to do it. It's a two-track process because speed is of the essence. We can't wait for us to develop this only domestically.
I hear you. And we'll keep an eye on it. Doug Burgum's a great guy to lead along with Chris Wright. Senator Steve Daines, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Back in a moment.
Real talk, real guests, real insight. Where curiosity meets conversation. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Every day, America's first responders stand ready. Firefighters, law enforcement, paramedics, doctors, dispatchers, and people who put themselves on the line for public safety. But keeping them connected in moments of crisis has not been easy. That's why Congress authorized a nationwide network for public safety. Today, that promise is fulfilled through FirstNet. It's the only nationwide network built with and for first responders. So whether it's a big city, rural town, or remote tribal community, FirstNet helps ensure no call for help goes unanswered. It gives first responders priority access, never throttles their communications in the U.S., helping them to connect across agencies when it matters most. This isn't just a network. It's a lifeline, a bipartisan commitment to America's public safety built to serve those who serve us all. FirstNet is the backbone of our nation's emergency response and will continue to be in the future. FirstNet, built with AT&T. Learn more on firstnet.com/public safety first.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Is there something that you want to say about the ad itself? The Sydney Sweeney has great genes. Do you have...
Ad spoke for itself.
You think the ad spoke for itself. Yeah. Okay. And the criticism of the content, which was basically that maybe specifically in this political climate, like white people shouldn't joke about genetic superiority. Like that was kind of like the criticism, broadly speaking. And since you are talking about this, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that specifically.
I think that when I have an issue that I want to speak about, people will hear.
Such a great answer. Give her so much credit. She, in case you don't know, she did an ad. She's a very attractive woman, great actress. And listen, I can't do her biography, but pretty much know it. She does an ad that says basically I have good genes, and it was for her jeans ad. All right. She looks good in the jeans. All right. She's built for jeans. She says she lives a life in jeans, and she had fun doing the ad. But people say, here's a white woman saying that she has good genes, G-E-N-E-S. Instead of J-E-A-N-S. And I love the way she didn't say, how dare you? I don't understand it. Or my heart goes out to people that misinterpreted that. She's like, well, I'll let you know if I want to comment. Love that. Love, love, love that answer. I've never met her. Don't know much about her. But the way she handled two things in which are somewhat controversial and shouldn't be in this age of anti-wokeism is brilliant. What do you think?
We are officially heading into Thanksgiving season, which back in the day when we were growing up was a time to take pride in our American history. But nowadays, what kids are being taught is very different. That's why I love America's History by Tuttle Twins. Grab the Family Starter Pack because it covers those pilgrims who came over here in a way that's not going to poison your children's minds and will actually make them thankful for this wonderful gift that we have been given. Pick up America's History and the whole starter pack at TuttleTwins.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. Our chance to have a good time before the week comes to an end, and we'll sit back and have a better time on the weekends in theory. Josh Krashauer is going to be with us, bring us inside all politics in Washington. Alan Estrin is going to be here, author of a brand new book called The Honest Book of Presidents, The Men Who Shaped America. He's co-founder of Prager University, so you know its quality, and also the executive producer of The Dennis Prager Show. So we're going to have a big hour. It's going to be a big day for the president. Not a day goes by where there isn't something significant at the White House. Yesterday, he's bringing down the cost of, as he calls, the fat shot, the fat shot drugs, Ozempic, Zeprin, what is it? Zep. I forgot what it is. But, you know, some of the bigger ones. So he is making it affordable for everyday people. And this is his theory. He says, look, rich people can afford this stuff. But if you want to make America healthy again, the best thing you could do is lose weight. And if this helps people, maybe spurs them on and encourage them to lose weight, I don't think they should be locked out of it. So it's about $150 a month. So that was good. Today, Hungary's leader comes in. He used to be staunchly American. Orban and Trump get along great, but their country is much closer to Russia, it seems. And they're still buying oil from Russia while being a member of NATO. So a significant meeting. Before we get to Josh, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
There's a lot of countries that have diplomatic relations with one another. The Abraham Accords is a partnership. The strength of it is to have majority Muslim countries, the Jewish state, able to partner on things to show the world that it is possible.
And that is Marco Rubio talking about the expansion of the Abraham Accords, Kazakhstan. But it's more than just you can recognize Israel and trade with Israel. I'll explain.
Number two.
That is why I want you, my fellow San Franciscans, to be the first to know. I will not be seeking re-election to Congress.
Yay! They should have had just a wild stadium cheer after that. The worst speaker of our lifetime. Forget about a powerful first woman. Enough. Look back at her legacy, and you would tear it up just like she did President Trump's speech in the first term. Goodbye, old guard. Hello, new guard. Say farewell, liberals, and say hello, socialists. The expired speaker is out. And become clear, that party is going way left in the future.
Number one.
I think we're getting closer. I mean, what I'm hearing is you have Democrats who are eager to move beyond this and are moving closer towards accepting what John Thune actually offered more than a month ago.
Shutdown, meltdown, another attempt today to end the longest shutdown in history as Debs dig in because they think what they learned from the election is by acting tough and having the lockout, it makes the Republicans more vulnerable. What's the reality? Josh Krasauer joins us now, Fox News Radio political analyst and editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider. Josh, the takeaway I believe that the Democrats have are leading them to continue the shutdown. Anything that you want to say to dissuade me of that notion?
Yeah, no, I agree with that analysis, Brian. I think they have become emboldened, frankly, as a result of the off-year election results winning, you know, by a bigger margin, I think, than even they expected in Virginia, New Jersey, and then also some of the other local races. So, they figure they're not paying a penalty for shutting the government down and holding out for healthcare, Obamacare subsidies. And I think this is going to go on for a little while longer. The expectation was maybe a mixed result on Election Day, maybe less than expected a performance by the Democrats could lead them to come to the bargaining table. I think they realize they're not suffering an immediate political penalty, and they're going to try to hold out for as much as they can.
I think so, too. And I get the sense that even though there is some concessions here on the right, not concessions, you open it up, we'll extend the CR, we're going to pay we're going to pay the Agricultural Department, we're going to pay the VA, and we're going to have a short-term extension for the rest of the government until January. It makes sense, but it doesn't look like that's not good enough.
Yeah, we're at the end of the week. I thought there could be some momentum after the elections to get things done by today. Not going to happen. We're heading closer and closer to Thanksgiving. I think that is more if you wanted to circle a date where it's, you know, kind of a drop dead date, I think that Thanksgiving is going to be maybe closer to it. I also think that, look, the air delays, the cuts to airline service in many, many major airports across the country is going to be felt by a lot of Americans. So if there's any, we've talked before, Brian, that a lot of Americans haven't necessarily felt the pressure unless you work for the government, you're in the D.C. area, or you have a federal government job. This is now starting to spread. The pain is starting to spread out to a lot more people. So I do think that is also going to be a pressure point that could start to get some movement on a negotiation.
Yeah, here's what Senator Kennedy says. He pretty much agrees with you. Cut 8.
I think we're going to be shut down at least 10 more days, maybe 2 weeks, maybe longer than that. And I don't know what else to do. I've voted 14 times to open up government. They've voted 14 times to keep it closed down. And all they ever do is talk and stamp their little feet and keep government shut down and blame us.
Okay. And that's why the president said, just blow up the filibuster. They will. Is that getting any traction with Republicans? Because I am not for that.
No, it's not. In fact, probably one of the biggest moments in Trump's second term presidency where Republicans in the Senate, essentially enough of them said, no, we're not going to change the rules of the filibuster. That was what Republicans fought for against Democrats when they were in charge, when President Biden wanted to do a whole lot of progressive, radical things in terms of getting his agenda passed. And there's all, you know, the argument is a good one. The fact that no party holds power forever and you want to have that filibuster, that's 60 vote supermajority to be able to restrain the most ambitious policy changes that one administration may try to make. So a lot of Republican senators spoke out against that. Trump acknowledged that. I think he talked about that with Bret Baier this week in his interview on Fox News. So I don't expect any changes to the filibuster rules being made, even though Trump has said he does want that. There's just enough resistance to the Republican caucus for that not to happen.
I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new that James Carville says he guarantees Democrats are going to win and they're going to blow up the Supreme Court, make it 13 justices, and they're also going to get two more states out of this and probably do everything they can. So that's what Trump sees. He says, I'm getting leadership, some of the high-profile names, guarantee they're going to go for that.
Yeah. Look, and by the way, the election result, I think people can overread an off-year election result, but don't. If you extrapolate what happened on election night into the Senate map, into the House map, there's a risk that Republicans felt pretty good about holding the Senate. They should. But if things get really bad, Democrats could take over that upper chamber. And that is also one major reason for the party not to blow up the rules, because it would really play against them in the medium term.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Tom Tillis, he's outgoing senator from North Carolina, cut 10.
It's not enough to get the vote. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like I said yesterday, there are simply not enough members who are willing to vote on it. I can't imagine that the Democrats would. So I appreciate the president's frustration, and I don't even begrudge him asking to nuke the filibuster. He's in the executive branch. He's frustrated with a lot of the obstacles the Democrats are putting forward. There's simply not the votes to nuke the filibuster.
So it just continues. They don't have the votes. And I also think I always hope there's always going to be a Manchin or a Sinema, and now a Fetterman, that would step in and said, sorry, this is not going to be good for the country.
Unfortunately, Brian, we don't have as many of those moderates, those Democratic moderates, as we used to. Fetterman is one who has been very outspoken about his disagreements, to put it mildly, with the rest of his conference. You know, I do think there are some Democratic senators up for re-election. John Ossoff in the swing state of Georgia is a big one. Some of the Democratic swing state senators, like Mark Kelly in Arizona. Those are the names to watch. If there's any negotiations, if there's any progress being made, it's going to be those folks whose constituents are much more to the middle and are not liking the fact that we're now at, 39 days of the shutdown.
I don't know if I can get myself to go to work after next year, because Nancy Pelosi has made it clear that she's not going to be in Congress anymore. She's being primaried, by the way. Here is a look back at some of Nancy's greats. Cut 21.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
He's impeached forever, no matter what he says or whatever headlines he wants to carry around.
You know, make America white again.
You really don't know what you're talking about right now. This is like giving you a bowl of doggy do, put a cherry on top, and call it a chocolate sundae.
Why did you refuse the National Guard on January 6th?
Shut up. Scapegoat. You know what a scapegoat is? They get a goat and they heap all of the ills onto the goat, and then they run the goat out of town.
So I'm going to miss that like a high fever. Your response to Nancy Pelosi leaving, does it reflect this coming civil war in the party?
It does. I mean, look, it's the end of an era for a lot of the old time Democratic establishment leaders. Steny Hoyer is another name to watch. I think he is also likely, he was in the leadership with Pelosi as her number two, and he's very likely to step down, retire at the end of his term this year. So this is the old guard. I mean, look, Pelosi's in her mid-80s. She hung on to kind of eventually be like a speaker emerita, trying to supervise Jeffries, supervise the next generation. I think there are a lot of worries. Jeffries has gotten a lot of heat from the left of his party, and Pelosi is not going to be there to kind of hold the party in line anymore. So I think one of her strengths was keeping the party in line, holding the line internally, and keeping, there's a lot of ideological differences in that Democratic caucus, but she was able to paper over them during her leadership. I don't know if this new generation is going to be quite as capable of doing that. And we see those ideological divisions with Mamdani getting elected in New York and some endorsing, some not. It's going to get messy. And I think that's going to – her legacy is obviously you played some of the highlights and lowlights, but also what ends up becoming with the Democratic caucus is going to be a big story going forward.
So Congresswoman Jayapal was asked about the coming divide in the party. And is there a divide in the Democratic Party? Cut 27.
Should Tuesday's election be a warning to him that he's got to?
Absolutely. I think it should be a warning. It has been a warning to Republicans. Clearly, they're talking about a shellacking and they got their asses kicked. I think one of them said that. And so I think that it should be to Democrats as well, that the way forward is to make sure you're fighting for people to be able to live, that you're delivering on affordability.
And the question was about Schumer. Should Schumer be taking a message from that? And she says yes, and Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, Schumer's up for re-election in 2028. The speculation is that he could face a challenge from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. His approval ratings in New York from the base, pretty low right now. Didn't endorse Mamdani, by the way. So, I mean, that is going to be the next big fight looking ahead. You got the House with Jeffries. You got Schumer in the Senate. Schumer, by the way, he was the person, the leader who decided not to go ahead with the shutdown the first time around, and took so much heat from inside that caucus, especially from the left. Now he's going ahead with it, but he really, I don't think his heart is into it, and he's really out of step generationally and ideologically with that new wave of Democratic progressive lawmakers.
Yeah, here's what Jayapal went on to say too when asked directly. Cut 28.
there's always been divisions. There will always be some divisions. I think the ability to pull together for the right reasons is really important. I mentioned how Abigail and Mikey were really essential in pushing for universal child care here in the House. You know, that we were not divided. There were two senators in the Senate, Democratic senator, at the time they were both Democratic, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who blocked that. But actually 99% of the Democratic Party was together. And I think we need more moments like that where we can show that we're really on the same page.
So we'll see. The party's not is always somewhat divided a little bit. Not everyone could possibly agree on everything. But this is going to be really transparent, especially when 28 comes. You're going to have AOC. You're going to have Bernie Sanders out there. Anybody in the squad that decides to run or go for a higher office, they're going to be out there. And they're going to be vehemently disagreeing with the Shapiros and the Beshears, in theory, as well.
And Gavin Newsom may be trying to square that circle.
Yeah, he'll be whatever you want.
You pick your flavor of the month. No, I mean, she mentions Spanberger, governor-elect now of Virginia, Sherrill in New Jersey. These are people who voted pretty pragmatically in the House, but they actually campaigned more and they needed to cater to the rising tide of progressives in those two states. And in the case of Sherrill, she picked the primary from her left in that campaign. So, you know, the big question to me, looking for the next few months, is how these incoming governors, they are pragmatists, but was it because of their politics in their districts? They couldn't really go to the left because the voters would vote them out in their districts? Or do they really truly believe that moderation and pragmatism is the way to go? We'll learn pretty quickly how they govern New Jersey and Virginia. Those are going to be big test cases, and maybe they'll be talked about nationally as well.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Josh. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Brian. You too.
All right, we come back. What the significance is of the deal with Kazakhstan? You might say, Brian, what a joke. Isn't that where Borat's from? In reality, I'm not sure, because Borat's not a real person. But again, I'm only answering a question that was in my head, and I imagined you were saying, so I'm not going to hold you against that against you. But I will say it is so much more important than you think. I'll explain.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We believe these deals within 2 years, by the time the ink dries on these contracts that were signed earlier today, within 2 years, based on our health improvements, we will be budget neutral. These drugs will not cost us money. The American taxpayers will be getting their money back. That's how important it is for us to reduce the cost of health care in this country, especially when it's due to preventable problems like obesity.
So that is Dr. Oz, obviously, and he is saying that we're going to have a significant discount on those obesity drugs. So I think in one way it's good. And number two, the only thing I worry about is long-term. We don't know the long-term effects of this, but if you are obese, if you have tried everything to lose weight, you know you would be healthier if you could do it. And there's so many people on it. I watched Serena Williams is on it, Charles Barkley, two of the best athletes of their generation. They said flat out, I take it, lost weight because of it. But right now, I think it might cost over $1,000 a month. Now it's going to be down to $159, $199. And who was there? RFK was there. So they figure it's part of the MAHA movement. However, this is the thing that I was been cautioned by experts, that if you're forcing Medicaid and Medicare patients, if you're forcing those programs to pay for it, that's where it gets cost prohibitive. What Dr. Oz is saying is that, yeah, now it's going to cost, but eventually the price is going to come down anyway. The supplementation won't be needed because, when success and competition come into play, the prices go down. But as the president says, the fat shot works. He walked around and said, hey, Steve Chung, you're on it. And I'm sure he did not know how to tell everyone. That's his communications director. I'm not sure that was part of what he thought was going to happen. Here is more from Dr. Oz, Cut 38.
We have an update, Secretary Kennedy. We thought it was 125 million pounds. Mr. President, our estimate, based on the company numbers as well, is Americans will lose 135 million pounds by the midterms. But I don't measure it in pounds. I measure it in saved lives.
I hope so. I hope it works out. They say, too, I was looking at listening to some political analysis. One of the things that could save the president at the midterms and maybe the next president. RFK, his numbers went down when he talks vaccines. You know when his numbers go up? When he talks about food, ultra-processing foods, and things like what he was talking about yesterday. the average American is much more positive about vaccines than he is. I'm not saying he's anti-vax, but he's close. He's popular when he talks about all these things and what we do on a daily basis. And most of those people that flock to him, I mean, Republicans will vote for him as long as Trump is there. But independents, and where did the president suffer since he won the election? He suffered independents and Hispanics. In this election, and I know it's three blue states, only take that with a grain of salt. But he lost women and people under 30. He gained in all those things. I'm not saying there was zero, but that's where the MAHA movement steps in. That's the wild card. And they said that J.D. Vance should make it clear early that he wants RFK to stick around.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, and it's, we're coming up on year 249. We're into year 49 of our history. Next year, 250, and everyone's emphasizing that, and that's correct. But we should really talk about 1775, too, and a lot of great history books are coming out, including the next one. It's called The Honest Book of Presidents, The Men Who Shaped America. And joining us now is Alan Estrin. He is co-founder of Prager University and also the executive producer of The Dennis Prager Show. Alan, welcome. So I love the concept of this book, especially looking back on our history. What's your approach to The Honest Book of Presidents? Why honest?
Well, the honest really, Brian, has to do with context. We really worked hard in this book to provide context for our readers, because this is the one thing that really seems to be missing from a lot of history discussion, especially when it comes to American history. You need, if you're going to understand these people, these men, our presidents, you need to understand what kind of world they were operating in. So The Honest Book of Presidents is we looked at the good, we looked at the bad, and we came up with our best assessment. And a lot of people are involved, a lot of mainstream, well-known historians, which I'm sure you're familiar with as well.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things that I love, that you point out that James Monroe is the most underappreciated, in my view, of our founding fathers. He was just around
absolutely
everything between fighting wars, between working out peace deals, Louisiana Purchase. Can you go through that for us?
James Monroe is a true American hero, one of our best presidents, and lived one of the most remarkable lives in American history. First of all, as you know, Brian, he was a key person in the Battle of Trenton. He was like 19 years old. Had Washington asked him to secure a road into Trenton. Now, Trenton was a key battle in the Revolutionary War, and Monroe was right there. He was wounded, badly wounded, and he should have died. And you could say it was luck, you could say it was a miracle, a doctor came by where he was lying and saved him. This was just the beginning of Monroe's life. He goes on, he was a major player in the War of 1812. James Madison, who was a brilliant guy but not a great war president, really depended on Monroe to run the War of 1812.
He got rid of Secretary of War Armstrong after he made some terrible decisions, including allowing Absolutely. Washington to burn. Yeah. And he took his Secretary of State and said, I want you to be Secretary of War, too. And one of these great moves was to call Andrew Jackson and let him get into the fight, because Jackson didn't know anybody. He got a great militia, great fighting spirit. But he's like, yeah, you could fight. Well, go ahead. Let's do this. And he knew enough to give other great leaders a chance to shine.
One of the things about Monroe is that people kind of tend to think that he was a protege of Jefferson and Madison. It's true. He was very close to those guys, but he was his own man. He was definitely his own man. And in fact, Madison and Monroe differed very substantially on the original Constitution. It was Monroe, I mean, in addition to all the other things he did, he was one of those people who pushed for a Bill of Rights. And he wasn't happy with the original draft of the Constitution.
So interesting, because I think, was it Jefferson that was against the Bill of Rights, thought it was unnecessary?
I don't think it was Jefferson. I mean, I think it was Hamilton and obviously Madison. They didn't think it was necessary. If it wasn't mentioned in the Constitution, obviously they considered it a right. But people like Monroe and Patrick Henry and others said, no, you gotta put this in there. And Madison was wise enough to recognize, I'm going to have to do this if we're going to pass the Constitution.
So, you know, we talk about Washington. I was just at Mount Vernon. I gave a speech there the other day. It's an amazing place. If you have not been there yet, although they're still rehabbing it a little bit, some construction. But, you know, why was he the indispensable man? Just when you think, you pick up Washington, you're going to read it, and now you're going to find, oh, he wasn't who they told us in fourth grade or eighth grade or 12th grade, and that's not who they portray on this guy lives up to the hype. The more you dig, the more impressed you become. Is that how you found him?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, and there are so many Washington stories, so many key moments in that early American history where he plays such a pivotal role.
And that's why he's known as the indispensable man. He really is. He was recognized then and for that generation. At the time, he was looked at.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they knew at the time, if it wasn't for Washington, this whole thing wouldn't have come together. You can't name an important moment in the first, beginning with the Revolution and obviously the winning of the Revolution and then the construction of the country after that, in which Washington is just not there at a key moment. He's always there. The indispensable man was a term that came up very early, and it's absolutely true.
And Alan, there's very few people that just everyone can agree with, oh, that's a great man. And you have people and Jefferson and Hamilton and Madison. Oh, that's the guy. There's nobody like him. He should be president. Oh, there's nobody like him. He should lead the army. And there's nobody like him because he's so selfless. He is the original guy who understands this is service. This isn't about your power to be in a power, a power hungry leader. And he walks away. He really did not want to leave Mount Vernon and come to New York and become president.
No, I mean, you know, there's that famous story about the American painter Benjamin West painting King George III. And King George III asks West, what is Washington going to do after the war? And West says, well, he's just going to return to his farm. And King George is reported to have said, well, if he does that, he's the greatest man of the age. And he was, Brian. He was truly the greatest man of the age.
Right.
And there were so many great men at that period.
You know, it's so interesting. Diving into Washington, too, he didn't have the easiest childhood. You know, his dad passed away. His mom was really tough, had a rough life herself, impossible to please, right? His older brother was a great mentor, but he was rarely around. And he was always hesitant because the people around him were much more higher educated than him. He had a different type of education. So he had his mild insecurities too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, another famous story is that he wanted to join the British Army. They turned him down.
Yeah. Thank goodness.
They just assumed that if you were an American, a Yankee, that you couldn't be as good as a Brit, and they were wrong.
So one of the things that you go out to, you show, is that Lincoln thought the South was bluffing. Now, even though they left the Union before he even got to the White House, he thought that they could be brought back in. He thought that they would never actually leave. Can you bring us back to that mindset?
Well, it's yes, and that is absolutely the case. I mean, you had the Missouri Compromise in 1820. You had the Compromise of 1850. The South had a habit of constantly threatening to leave. And as far as Lincoln was concerned, look, they're only a relatively small percentage of people own slaves in the South. And he thought this was just another bluff and that he could talk them out of it. And he was wrong. It had just gone too far.
And a lot of people were mad at Lincoln because, you know, he ran on, we're going to eliminate slavery. When he got there, he made a deal with the South. He goes, look, you keep your slaves, just come back. And then people like Frederick Douglass were incensed. It's like, well, you ran on getting rid of the slaves. But what was his objective? Keeping the country together first. And then we'll worry about that second. And they didn't want to hear it by the time he got there. Plus, this new guy, no one knew him, and nobody in the South voted for him. kind of a split ticket situation, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, he wasn't on the ballot in most, if not all of the southern states. No, Lincoln wanted, his goal was to hold the Union together. And if it meant we keep slavery at that point, and he said it, I'm okay with that. The Union cannot split, but the South had gone too far. They could not come back. And then they faced Lincoln's wrath and the North's wrath, and obviously it was a horrible conflict, but he saved the country, which is why he's always ranked as one of our greatest presidents.
So one of the most mild-mannered presidents, but people know him because of his fiscal responsibility, is Calvin Coolidge. How did that play into the success we had economically in the 20s, the Roaring 20s?
Well, Calvin Coolidge, a personal favorite of mine, the man who governs least governs best, that was really Coolidge's theory. He believed in the American people. He believed if he could get the government out of the way, the economy would thrive. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And did he go two terms? Or did he go one?
Well, he went, he sort of went 1 3/4 because Warren Harding died suddenly in San Francisco early in his term. By the way, I would mention, as long as we're talking about Warren Harding, there are all these guys that, you know, usually don't get mentioned, like Harding. Harding, I think, is a very much an underrated president. I mean, he was coming after Wilson. People had enough of Wilson's socialism, and Harding ran on his slogan was normalcy. Let's return to normalcy. And Harding did exactly that. He returned the economy to the American people, to American business.
Yeah.
And had he lived, I think he would have had a good presidency. He did have problems. There was some issues with corruption as an administration, but it's really been blown out of proportion.
Bill Clinton, the luckiest president, you say. Why?
Well, he was lucky because when he came into power, China was not a big issue. Obviously the Soviet Union was gone. There was the internet was just beginning to blossom. He had no major conflicts to deal with. The world was it was a moment when the world was like more at peace than it had been in a long, long time.
Yeah. And the economy ended up good. He ended up, but famously, we always play it, when he talked about the deficit being zero. We had no deficit because he actually did a deal with Republicans.
That's absolutely correct. And Clinton was a pragmatist and a moderate. And in retrospect, as it comes to the economy, Clinton did very well. He obviously was someone who couldn't get out of his own way. And unfortunately, his presidency is really known for one, let's call it, bad act.
So the Gerald Ford, you say, sacrificed his presidency to save the country from national suicide. And are you alluding to that he pardoned Nixon?
Yes. Yeah. He nobody wanted him to do it. His advisors didn't want him to do it. Obviously, the press, who hated Nixon, they really wanted Nixon to go to jail. They didn't want him to do it. And the fact that he said, no, it's better for the country. Let's get past this. The nightmare's over. And he was right. He was right. It cost him his presidency. You know, it also hurt him was that skit. I mean, you may be too, I think you are too young to remember this. The skit on Saturday Night Live, where they constantly referred to Ford as a bumbling kind of buffoon.
Chevy Chase.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact was, Ford was probably the greatest athlete to occupy the White House. The guy led Michigan to a national football championship in the 30s. But he stumbled off the plane one time and they caught it. And Chevy Chase made a whole routine out of it. And that and the pardon really what hurt Ford.
And think about it too, Alan. He still almost won. All the corruption involved with the Nixon situation and how it just the whole country was obsessed with it. Ford never was running on a ticket. He was named, he was picked from the House to replace Spiro Agnew. He becomes president.
Right.
He is the ultimate definition of accidental president. And then he still almost beats Jimmy Carter.
Right. Gerald Ford was the only president ever to never get one vote.
Yeah.
Because he, so, Brian, a point I'd love to make about this book, that it's a series of biographies. Obviously, it's biographies of all the presidents, but it's, and we wrote this very, the team approached this very intentionally. We wrote, this is a biography of the United States of America. Every president is involved in whatever the biggest issue is of the day. It doesn't matter whether you're Franklin Roosevelt in the middle of World War II or you're Chester Alan Arthur and you're another accidental president and you're dealing with civil service reform. Whatever the major issue is, it goes through the White House. So when you read this book, it's a short history of the United States of America. So it's really in essence two biographies, biography of all the presidents and a biography of America.
Love it. Alan Estrin, thanks so much. And to everybody that put the book together, The Honest Book of Presidents, get it wherever you're comfortable getting books. I download them all. So this way I can highlight them and I can always refer back to them. Alan, thank you. Appreciate it.
Brian, pleasure.
Absolutely. Back in a moment.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm running for governor to make New York affordable and safe. We have seen decades of single-party rule led by Democrats, and Kathy Hochul is the worst governor in America. New York is the most unaffordable state in the nation, with the highest taxes, the highest energy bills, the highest utility bills. We also have a crime crisis because Kathy Hochul has brought us failed bail reform and has embraced the defund the police Democrats.
So that is Elise Stefanik making it official. She's going to run as a Republican against Kathy Hochul. Remember, Lee Zeldin ran. They said he had no shot. He lost by 6, maybe a little less. She thinks she can make the difference. When I see the polling, Lee never led. She's up 1 or 2 polls. These are smaller polls, but the fact that she's close with coming from an upstate New York, I mean, in a predominantly Democratic state, you just saw what happened in the midterm elections, putting Zohran Mamdani in there. I think that helps her. That's more likely that independents will say, we need a counterweight. And they know how tough she is. They know how competent she is. Bruce Blakeman also told us yesterday, the Nassau County executive, that he might run. The one thing they have in common, both extremely have a supporter in the White House. President Trump really likes both of them individually and has said it publicly and privately. But what he does is he wants to get a win. And he will look at who has the best chance to win it. Because it's hard for me to think Republicans have enough money to have a brutal knockout, drag out primary and then go against a Democrat. Because when you have that primary, as you know, you find out the worst things about that individual and you expose them. And even if you win, like Dr. Oz barely beat Dave McCormick, by the time they were done, Dr. Oz was so beat up, he won by 1.5 points that he was really susceptible to all the counterattack ads and a lot of opposition ads coming from the future Senator John Fetterman. So even though for the presidency, I think the best thing you could do is have a tough primary, I don't really think it helps when you have a tough primary when you're running for House and Senate. What do you think about that? Also, can't wait to see you in person, Fort Myers, Florida, February 14th, Valentine's Day, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for more, and VIP opportunities remain. Also streamed on your favorite app, your favorite streaming service, Fox Nation. Brian Kilmeade Show.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow starting November 30th on FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest-growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show, final hour of the week, 1-866-408-7669. Bob in the hour, Tommy Lahren, co-host of the weekend show. You got a 5-8 Saturday and Sunday. And, of course, we have Clay Travis from Outkick. He is a founder there and also an author of a brand new book. And you also, you know, you see him and watch him and listen to him on the radio every day. But his brand new book is called Balls, How Trump, Young Men, and Sports Saved America. And Clay Travis, that's what brings you to New York, along with the Patriot Awards, right?
Yes, it does. Patriot Awards were awesome last night. It was good to see you there.
Was that your first time you went?
No, I went. I've been several times. We did. I did Seminole. And then we had the one in Nashville a couple of years ago, which is my hometown,
it's around the block,
which was a lot of fun. But I always leave that place thinking that event, man, there's a lot of awesomeness in the world. Mm-hmm. It's very uplifting all the time. And I thought, as it always is, it delivered on that front again last night.
Yeah, I think it did. It's a very red, white, and blue event, and it's a lot of fun to see everybody out and about. And it's kind of cool. Long Island University, I actually went to that college, but for the most part, we were in Hollywood, Florida for a while. Nashville was great, and we'll see where we go again. Clay, right now, for what you see, do you hear anything, or do you want to save it for your show, about a lockout ending, shutdown? I mean, you want to fly out of here. This affects everybody. At what point do people realize this is a loser for everybody?
I think the flight situation is potentially going to mobilize a lot of people to get things solved, because Democrat, Republican, Independent, I tell y'all, when you show up and you're trying to go through that TSA line, I saw it over 3 hours in Houston this week, and I'm flying out tonight. And I was just telling you when I sat down, you know, Delta sent me an email and they said, "Hey, just so you know, your flight might or might not exist today." And so,
what kind of email is that?
Yeah, I know. It's like, well, thanks, but I'm supposed to leave, you know, about 3 Eastern and head out to the airport as soon as I finish my radio show. And I got no idea if I got a flight or not. And so that's frustrating to people across the board.
Did you hear what the guy from Frontier said, the president?
No, not yet.
He said, yeah, whatever you do, book another air, like book a flight later. So if you're on Delta, book one on American an hour later. By the way, why would that work for anybody's advantage? All of a sudden, one minute this plane sold out, the next minute it's wide open.
It's funny, I did that. So I have there's a late night flight out of here where we are in New York City to get to my hometown of Nashville, Southwest Airlines. And Southwest is the primary airline hub, honestly, for Nashville. So I fly them all the time. But in the event that got canceled, I'm trying to get back home. And so I might be flying out at 10. So I think there's probably a lot of people doing what I do. If I don't need to use that flight, Southwest, pretty good refund policy. I'll get the money back. But I kind of want to get out of the city.
I know. So let's talk about your book, because it plays into what goes on. You really believe Democrats have lost the male vote. That
yes,
testosterone has been missing. Did anything change after this election for you?
No. I think the biggest thing is, if you look at the numbers, 600,000 Trump voters didn't show up in Virginia and didn't show up in New Jersey. Now, it's an off-year election, but Trump got more votes in Virginia and New Jersey than either of the Democrat winning candidates did. So turnout was down substantially, and turnout was down more substantially for Trump voters. Now, where I think going forward becomes the challenge is, when Trump's not on the ballot, do Republicans have the ability to mobilize his low propensity voters? I think that's going to be the number one story of 2026. I think it'll be the number one story of 2028, candidly. But I do believe, if you go look at those returns, even for the people who showed up, I shared this data this morning. I don't know if you kind of dove into it. I love looking at the data. For white voters, only white college-educated women voted for the winning Democrat candidates. Every other group voted against the winning Democrat candidates. And this book came out of a trip that I made to the University of Chicago in February, where they had a gender identity discussion panel. And I went on and they were talking about, why did young men and why did men overwhelmingly break for Republicans? The Democrat brand is toxic with the young men. They use it as an insult. You know, I've got 3 boys. They will kid each other with, "Oh, you're a Kamala voter," or, "Oh, you're a Democrat." because the Democrat Party has completely turned its back on young men, and I would say on testosterone and men in general.
So interesting. You know how they're compensating? Cursing.
Yeah.
Right? They started to decide to act tougher. We're going to put out – even Schumer is pretending like he's from the Bowery.
You know, we used to talk about this, Brian. You've interviewed every politician under the sun at some point in time. But, you know, we used to talk about this. Who was the guy you'd most like to have a beer with? I remember that back in the day with George W. Bush and Al Gore, and certainly with Bill Clinton and even Barack Obama. Who is the Democrat that you would like to just hang out with and watch a game?
I hear you. Absolutely. And especially now. I feel like it's a very judgmental party.
Yes.
They're waiting for you to drop and make a mistake, to do something politically incorrect. What I'm so heartened by is that we're all leaving that. And the people that tried that started it was Hollywood. And they're the first one going, I can't hire a crew because they got to be diverse. They got to have a questionable gender. I can't get the best key grip, the best audio guy, the best director. Because if I want to win an award, I got to have a more diverse cast.
It's funny.
I got to change every story to make some type of minority the hero.
Yeah, and this is why I always say people sometimes get mad at me. I spent a lot of time out in L.A. with Fox Sports over the last decade because Fox Sports is primarily based there. And so I've been on a lot of studio sets. The number of guys walking around carrying the camera, building the sets, who will come up and give you a fist pound and be like, dude, I agree with everything you say. You know, people tend to think of Hollywood as a left-wing town. The people who build the sets, the people who carry around the cameras, that very often is not true. Now, the star on the camera, the person making all the money, and the executives, that can be very much the case that it is a left-wing town. But the people who build things in Hollywood, and there's still a lot of them, people who make movies and do it with a physical capacity of their job, they tend to be a lot of them on our team.
Absolutely. So I'll bring you to general sports, too. This story in the back page of the New York Post, did you see it today?
Yeah.
Giants kicker. Graham Gano reveals he's receiving multiple death threats from people, whether he hits a field goal or misses, from people betting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you blew it. You hit that field goal. You blew it. You missed that field goal. Your groin injury was hidden from me. You cost me X amount of dollars. I've heard other players complain about this. This is the age where everyone's betting. Every 20-year-old is betting, 25-year-old. And now you're getting mad at the players you used to worship.
Yeah, it's funny in some ways. My best advice on this, and
you want to hear him say it?
Yeah.
Cut 41.
I hear everyone else's frustration, media, fans. I mean, shoot, ever since sports betting started happening, I get people telling me to kill myself every week, you know, because I'll hit a kick that loses them money. I'll miss a kick and it loses them money. It was the other day somebody told me to get cancer and die. That stuff's part of it. Just being, like, playing this long, that stuff, you're used to it by now. So, but with that being said, like, I see everyone's frustration, and I'm frustrated too. Just want to play ball, and I think that just constantly not being able to is tough. But I'm doing everything I can to try and come back and play, and I mean, that's my hope.
Would you say this is just inevitable the minute they started making gambling?
Yeah, I also think it's a sign. I know gambling is the connection here, but social media is just toxic. Right.
Was getting written letters.
Oh, written letters. You know, we got written death threat letters to the house and we had to turn those over. Written letters to sound scarier and people are crazy. And obviously, I think people should be prosecuted for any of this. And I do think that would help on some level. But I tell him the same thing I tell my boys. I don't know that you gain anything from looking at comments from people you don't know. In life, in general, one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was never take criticism from somebody you wouldn't ask for advice.
Right.
It's the
and
best.
That's called everybody. So yeah, don't take it from anybody.
You know, we do this show, and I remember talking with Colin Cowherd, who's a good buddy of mine, and, you know, his social media grew. And he said, you know, you go into the mention, somebody will be like, I don't know why you're talking about the Lakers right now. Why are you talking about the Cowboys? Because they're big teams and lots of people care, right? Yeah. Who knows better what people want to hear? The person who has been doing the job for decades or the person who has decided to pull their phone out and send a message? And his advice was, and I think it's a good advice for young broadcasters, don't read mentions during your show because you get people in your head. And if you're worried about what they are saying, you don't do the best job.
I hear you. So listen, Clay's got his book out. It's called Balls, How Trump, Young Men, and Sports Saved America. He interviewed Trump about 10 times, right? Maybe more. And do you get the sense that this was intention or this is just Trump's speed that happened to unite men around him because they could relate more to him?
I think it's innate. Trump spent his entire life to a large extent in locker rooms. I think he connects well with men. Trump is the kind of, it surprises people for who have not spent time around him. And I know you have. And people say, okay, what's he like? In my experience, super nice and very welcoming and very quick to give credit to others. The kind of guy who would walk into a locker room and be really well liked by everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe surprises some people. But Trump one-on-one is very, very good. He gives you a great deal of attention, a lot of positive feedback. He's interested in what you say and what in my experience. And so I think that you go back and look at Trump at old school WrestleManias or the big fights with Mike Tyson back in the day in Atlantic City. There he is ringside trying to put these events on. And now he's going to be doing the UFC fight in June, it appears, at the White House. He just loves it. He loves being in the arena. He likes the conflict, the combat of sports. And
it helps him as a politician.
Yeah, I think 100%. Because what matters, I think, in this day and age, and it's going to matter even more as we move into even more of an AI age, is do people think you're real? Do people believe, they may not agree with you, but do they believe you're authentic about the way you act and behave?
And that's why I have no patience for Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
It's a total act.
Completely.
I mean, you could say when your body can't even match your words.
That's right.
His hands. You know, if you're Italian, you talk with your hands. It's genetic.
My wife makes fun of me. I'm not Italian. She's Italian, but I talk with my hands all the time.
But your hands have to match what you're saying. He's all over the place because I don't think his head is attached. His mind, he's not saying anything he means.
Here's my concern. He's an articulate liar, and Democrats are really wrong on almost every issue.
Especially he's defending his work in California. How can you do that?
That's completely correct. Mamdani is an articulate liar. They want that story because it convinces them they're on the right side of history. So you and I might be out there and we're like, okay, well, if you do X, then the consequences are Y. That's how logically people think. Candidly, I think it's one reason that Republicans are doing so well with men, because they may not agree with everything, but they look at it and they say, okay, logically kind of analyze it. A lot of Democrats are emotion, and they want to emotionally feel seen and they want to emotionally feel heard. I mean, you know, even the Mamdani election that we just had in New York City, if he actually puts his policies in place, everything that he has complained about gets worse. It doesn't get better, right? And we can logically work through that and say, okay, well, if you're worried about the cost of housing, you need way more housing. You don't need to limit what you can charge for the existing housing, because that's actually just going to make the situation worse.
Clay, it plays to what I believe is going to be the debate, I think, for a responsible Republican, is you have to go to bat for capitalism.
Yes.
And views for democracy. Okay, that didn't fly. You tried to say democracy.
Right.
But if you have to just explain to people capitalism and that rich people are good.
Yes.
Rich people actually, usually they're the ones who outworked you. Sometimes you got to get lucky, but if you look at their timesheet, it's 80 hours, right? It's 80 hours. I had a goal. I have an opportunity to get a goal. You should love that guy's in a beautiful Hummer and a fantastic plane.
I agree. You should.
But
I
think we have to explain it.
I think the way to think about it is we got to build a bigger pizza. Right. Anybody who's ever been to a party and there's 8 slices of pizza and there's 9 people there, somebody's going to get screwed. The only way to make everybody happy is to build a bigger pizza so everybody gets a slice. And capitalism expands the economy faster than any other historical organization system in place. The downside of capitalism is it works so well that it creates the luxury of time and space to argue that there are other systems that would work better.
Yeah.
You know, like these kids out there, I understand why you're frustrated. Like the cost of lifestyle in New York City and in many cities around America is very high.
Forever, by the way.
It was never cheap.
Yes.
But you, as you get older, come to understand, hopefully, how capitalism works. Mm-hmm. But dads and mom are helping to front their bills. They don't have any idea. They're frustrated. I do think, Brian, the CEO of Palantir said this recently, Palantir, however you pronounce it.
No, Palantir.
Yeah, Palantir, said that we're headed for, and I think New York City over-indexes this, a world where super young college graduates who paid for great degrees that they thought were going to guarantee their success, Ivy League schools, where a lot of these 22 and 23-year-olds don't have the jobs that they think they should, and they're looking around, and suddenly the guy who's the plumber or the guy who is the car mechanic, things that physically you still can produce with your hands, is more value than they do in an AI era. As a young lawyer, I mean, lots of young lawyers, Brian, are going to get replaced in terms of the work that they can do more efficiently, either outsourced to other countries or just AI.
They say this is the biggest shift since the cell phone.
Yes.
And what it did to other to the landline business, for lack of a better term, since 2003.
Yeah.
They say when everyone went out of a job, then nothing anyone did. It's called progress. So when those job numbers come out, Trump's going to get hit. 16,000 lost in Amazon, 7,000. So he's going to get, but it's really nothing to do with him at all.
No, you're 100% right. And I also think the Trump economy issue that he's going to get hit on, and I don't remember this. You were too young probably to remember it too. Biden was so bad that the vestiges of the price increase that occurred so rapidly in his tenure is still lingering, because everybody out there is upset when they go get a fast food meal like I do at Chick-fil-A with my family, and I have to pay over $50. Everything just costs way more than it should because prices skyrocketed so rapidly. And the historic analogy here is it took a while for people to learn that Reagan had fixed much of the economy because Carter was so bad. I think that's what Trump is dealing with right now, is the hangover of Biden.
And Clinton benefited from Bush 41.
Yeah.
Pick up Clay's book. It is out this week. It's called Balls, How Trump, Young Men, and Sports Saved America. Thanks, Clay.
Thank you, Brian. Keep killing it.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Are you ready to say Pelosi and Schumer need to go?
I mean, I think so. I mean, and we need to shift power. We need to make sure that we have a transition of power in the leadership of the Democratic Party.
But she stayed and she made a deal with AOC. This is in 2020. You know, elect me speaker one more time and then I'll leave. And she did. But she stayed in Congress, but she left leadership technically, and now she officially is out. There's no commitment from Chuck Schumer to run again. He's up in 2 years. It might be next year. I'll look at it. It might be next year. So now it's time for a change. I really believe this is going to be the start of a civil war among Democrats, and I can't wait to see it. They might wait for a primary. I'm not sure. Tommy Lahren next to talk about that. Quick note, One Nation coming up on Sunday night at 10 o'clock. You're going to love it. Jim Farley joins me along with Mike Rowe. We talk about the job loss and job changes. What's going on with high-tech positions in AI and robots? Are they making certain jobs a thing of the past? And are they opening up other jobs? The answer is yes and yes. And also, we're going to be talking to Piers Morgan as well as Senator Dave McCormick. Brian Kilmeade Show, that'll be Sunday at 10 o'clock, One Nation. Meanwhile, more Brian Kilmeade Show in just a moment.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Do you think Zohran Mamdani is a leader in the Democratic Party now?
Well, of course he is. He's going to be the mayor of the city of New York.
He made it clear what is true in every state in this country is that the richest people in America are becoming phenomenally richer. That's what Zohran campaigned on. It resonated with people. It will resonate with people in every state in this country.
So he's a leader. Wow. He hasn't even gotten the job yet. He just won it. Congratulations. But he's a leader. And of course, independent socialist Bernie Sanders. I'm not disparaging him. That's what he calls himself. Would know. Tommy Lahren is here, co-host of the Big Weekend Show from 5 to 8 on Saturday, 5 to 8 on Sunday. Tommy, do you believe the New York City elected the next leader of the Democratic Party?
I think in their mind they did. And if that's what they think is going to win them the midterms, going to win them in 2028, I mean, have at it. But the problem with Democrats is that they think that the American people only exist in their deep blue cities. They think the American people only exist in New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, D.C. area. They don't really account for all of the Americans in those really important swing states that they lost all seven of. Mm-hmm. They don't think that those people matter. So they get a sugar high off of New York City that elected a socialist slash communist. And they're like, well, look, this is how we win in New York City. By the way, he won. Was it a blowout?
No.
No.
He said he's got a mandate.
Yeah, he said he's got it, but it was a million people. And a million people in the city of New York City, it sounds like a lot, but is it really? So, yes, you won in deep blue New York City, you got a million votes. Is that going to work in Ohio? Is that going to work in Michigan? Is that going to work in Pennsylvania? Is that going to work in Wisconsin? I don't think so.
Are you relieved that the socialists lost to Minneapolis, the Somali socialists? Because Adam Fry, that guy Fry is terrible.
Yeah.
Remember, he let the Minneapolis police station go. But I guess at least he's not anti-American. At least he's not anti-capitalist that I know of. This Somali was campaigning with a Somali flag.
Yeah. Oh, no. And speaking directly to what he thinks are his people and pledging allegiance to Somalia. Again, we've got a problem with unfettered immigration in this country. We really need to take a look at that. We probably shouldn't let as many people into this country who hate all of our values and traditions and way of life. That's something to look at. But this is what the Democrats continually do to us, Brian. They give us insane. And then they give us more insane. And then we look at insane like, well, at least insane won.
Oh, yeah. I know they're both terrible. I would say, there's another thing, too, is that Democrats have a lot to be happy about. But it looks like Republican voters didn't even show up. And they seem to have done better with women. All right. And people under 30. Do you think this is a one-off, or do you think that Trump should learn something from this? The Trump administration should take something away from this?
Yeah, it's sobering. Now, listen, I don't think that what happened on Tuesday is necessarily indicative of what's to come, but it is a wake-up call, and it would be ridiculous to ignore it, and it would be stupid to ignore it. We need to work on women voters. There is, for as much as the left has alienated young men, the right has not done a great job of capturing female voters.
Give me an example. Why? Because of Roe v. Wade?
Well, that was the big deal in 2022. That's why we lost, right? So that's why it looked like it did. The red wave that never came, that was, to me, really an abortion issue. We haven't heard as much about the abortion stuff because the Trump abortion bans haven't happened. That was the big thing last year. Didn't happen, so they've moved on. It'll come back. But I think even more so than the abortion issue. Unfortunately, the conservative Republican movement has really leaned into some of the more social traditional issues. And I'm not saying those are bad issues. But if you look at the young women and how they're voting, I think there are a lot of young women that say, I agree with your economic policies. But when you start talking about all of your social stuff, you lose me. And that doesn't
give me an example of some social things.
I'll tell you. I think it's great when we have cultural leaders talking about getting married and having kids and being traditional wives and mothers. I think that's great. But when your political message to women is, well, you should consider being a stay-at-home mom, and you do really need to go to work, and you don't really need to be a boss, and there are a lot of Gen Z and millennial women that say that party's not for me. Whereas I want to be a wife and a mother, I also want to be an executive. I also want to work a job. I also want to have my own money, and I want to do something and accomplish something in the workforce. But when the Republican Party is leaning so heavily into be a traditional mom, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but if you're talking to Gen Z and millennial women, our generation, especially millennial women, like, we didn't grow up necessarily that way. We grew up wanting to achieve, and there's nothing wrong with that either.
Right.
So maybe just let us do whatever we want and stop telling us how to live our lives.
Yeah, I thoroughly agree with you. I think that ship has sailed like 25 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, people make your own judgments. I know the whole thing with same-sex marriage during Bush's first run when he was going against Al Gore. We believe marriage should be between a man and a woman. That was something that was popping up. You had to address it. But this is, if asked in a podcast, if I'm a candidate, how I view a woman, if that comes up, Charlie Kirk would have answered, my image is what you just said. But he was not running for office. I don't think he was saying you better go grab the mantle of this. And if you look at the first couples in the White House, J.D. Vance's wife is a very productive, accomplished lawyer. Melania Trump is a very good businesswoman who's was a fantastic mom.
And who's running the Trump administration? Pretty much all badass women.
Yeah. So it's not hard. You don't have to say, all you have to do is just look around and just tell your story. So that's what you think Vivek Ramaswamy was saying too, wasn't he? He said, enough with this judgment and ideologue. Do you think it's dangerous for Republicans to keep saying Mondami is a Muslim? Oh, he's a Muslim after 9/11. I think that's a step back, too.
Yeah. It's not about saying he's a Muslim. We don't care about that. It's about pointing out some of the issues. See, this is the problem, and this is the trap that they put us in. It's not about him being a Muslim. It's about the ideology that he has expressed. Okay, we should reject Sharia. We should reject globalize the Antifada. We should reject we're going to arrest Netanyahu if he steps foot in New York City. We should reject Linda Sarsour saying we're going to force Mondami to deinvest from all of Israel. That's the stuff we should reject, right? So I also don't want us to go back to the era of Obama when you couldn't even say radical Islam. We all had to pretend like there was no problem with it.
Yeah, we're able to say that again.
Yeah, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a real problem with it. Look at Dearborn, Michigan. Like, there's some things that are happening there that are uncomfortable. When the mayor of Dearborn is telling a Dearborn resident that was upset about a street being named after somebody who prays to Hamas, that they can leave and he'll throw a parade the day he does.
Yeah, he's telling me you can leave. I'm telling you to
leave.
As if his job.
I think we can have a problem with that.
Right, absolutely. I think that's a good point. But looking back at this election, I don't think, this is what I believe. They say, well, Trump's not on the ballot. These guys got to get used to it. The midterms are going to be different. He's going, I know he's going to go everywhere. I think he's had, this word is he's going to have a convention.
Yeah,
so
maybe
in
Vegas.
The summer, yeah. Oh, you know what? It's already done.
Is I don't. It's not done, but that was the rumors. That
make that decision? It sounds
maybe.
Like you're on the decision committee.
Listen, I do 6 hours on the weekend, and we've talked about it. But I think Vegas would be a good spot.
It'll feel like he's running. I know Trump gets it better than anybody else. Now he went from the least experience to the most experience. So I think he's going to go, no, I'll be on the ballot. And he'll outline exactly the, I'm going to get impeached if you do this. You remember we went through last time, we're going to do that again. This time he did not love Winsome Sears. Great biography, he didn't like her as a candidate, and I think she was critical of him. And then with Jack Cittarelli, the theory was that if you were too much involved in New Jersey, it becomes a six-point loss, like you lost, even though it was showing improvement. Not sure he could win in those three states, and he wasn't going to play a role with Curtis Sliwa in New York City.
Yeah. So that again, I think that this wasn't a good indication of it wasn't a referendum on President Trump. I think it was a problem with a gender gap, and I think it was a problem with some of the maybe the candidates weren't the strongest that they could have been. And I think, again, people got lazy and complacent because we're still on. It was a year ago that we were cheering MAGA, MAGA. But we have to remember that there have been a lot of red waves that we thought were going to crash that never did.
Do you remember how the red wave that never happened actually helped? Because Joe Biden did so much better than everyone thought, no one asked for him not to run.
Yeah.
And he, okay, the country got over Afghanistan. The country got over 9% inflation. I'm going to just cruise.
But
I'm
why?
I'm going to cruise to 4 years.
Because of abortion.
Right. But the bottom line is, he had a case to make.
Yeah.
And they go, all right, well, let him go, which is obviously a huge mistake. The New York Post had an editorial today, a message to the president. Don't tell people that prices of things are affordable and going down. When they aren't. They say, for example, Target went up 5.5%, Walmart 5.3%, Amazon 13%. Things went down with eggs. Things went down with gas. So say it. Don't just say things are good because Joe Biden did that and he lost. You know, it was a disaster.
People
you
are
agree
still
with
feeling
that?
It. Yeah, I don't think that you can try to tell people that things are great when they're not. I think that's always going to be a losing strategy because people still go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
So I think people are insulted when you try to tell them that. Explain to them why it hasn't come down yet. Explain to them when it will. If it's going to take a little bit for the tariff fatigue to wear off,
tell people that. The big, beautiful bill is not even in. I mean, it passed, but it hasn't been implicated. You know,
just be honest with people. It's going to take a little bit. This is what we're working on. Don't worry. Energy prices are going to come down. We're drilling here. We're drilling there. Like, just tell people. It's going to come down. We realize right now it's not enough. Mm. We're going to work on it. But shift your message to an economic message.
Now, do people have to wait to Saturday and Sunday to see you? Are you going to be on another show called Outnumbered?
I'm going to be on Outnumbered in just a few minutes.
Wow. It's going to be great. I cannot wait to watch it. And I'll be done with my show. So just wait to get the signal before you actually start.
Okay.
If you don't mind. That is Tommy Lahren. You can watch her from 5 to 8 Saturday and Sunday on the Big Weekend Show. And she hosts Outkick. Tommy Lahren is fearless. Tommy, always great to see you.
Good
thanks
to see
for stopping
you, Ryan.
By. Have a good show.
Thank you.
It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
As far as the professionals go, look, and by the way, I still believe it. I think the Democrats are still a mess. I truly believe they're a mess just because there is what this shows to me is, again, there is this underlying potential energy within the United States of America that is much larger than I think any of us could have imagined. And channeling that energy directionally will be the challenge, yes, for whoever wants to harness it.
John Stewart, being honest about the Democratic Party, very similar to what Jay Tapper's doing. I think he's trying to go up the middle a little bit more. I think John Stewart, no matter what he says about us at Fox or whatever, I think he's one of the smartest guys out there. And I do think that people listen to him inordinately. And for him to say that after a big win is noteworthy, because this is every reason to say these guys are back and this is the message, especially after the easy time he gave Mondami when he came into studio. I thought, okay, this guy's going to do everything possible to make sure this young person with ideas who's a good speaker and a socialist does well. I have no idea what his fundamental issues are. But how about this? John Stewart says that, and Stephen Colbert came out a couple of days ago and said, you know, everyone thinks I'm liberal. I'm really conservative in a lot of ways, which I thought that was another bit he was doing. I know when he was pretending to be a Bill O'Reilly clone when in the Colbert report, that's when he pretended to be a conservative. But for him now to say, you know what, I'm a little conservative. People just think one way after what we've witnessed since Donald Trump came onto the scene 8 years ago. But it shows a tactic. And I think it's because Bill Maher did it. Bill Maher, the ultimate liberal, the counterweight to the Rush Limbaugh in many ways, and he was obviously not nearly as big, has come out and said, these issues, can't buy it. It's anti-Israel stuff, not buying it. This anti-American socialism stuff, don't like it. These people that don't want to work and want to disrupt, I'm not going to put up with it, obviously. And those who were Democrats couldn't believe it. They were losing Bill Maher. But he's had enormous success because of it. And I think people are seeing it. Also, how long are you going to tell us Donald Trump is bad? And that's why when you campaign against Trump, Mamdani's going to do this. Famously, in the 60s, 50s and 60s, the best running back in the NFL was Jim Brown. So Jim Brown's unstoppable. He never took a step out of bounds to avoid a tackle. In 10 seasons, he led the NFL all-time rushing leader until Franco Harris broke the record. So Sam Huff, who started with the Giants and Redskins or vice versa, decided that he was going to be the guy that stops Jim Brown. And before he actually stopped him, Sam Huff from West Virginia, who turns out is in Joe Manchin's book when he talks about his football days, Sam Huff said, I'm the only guy who can stop Jim Brown, and ended up elevating his profile because he said that he could stop Jim Brown, and maybe he had a couple of good games, but for the most part, Jim Brown was looking around saying, who is this guy? What do you mean he's the linebacker that can stop me? And Sam Huff was a great player too and a Hall of Famer as well, but he wasn't proportionally Jim Brown, but he made himself big because he was a rival. That's what Newsom's trying to do. He's trying to be the counterweight to Trump so Democrats lean on him. And then Mondami's doing the same thing. In his mayoral victory speech, he brings up Trump, mentions one disparaging thing against his opponent, the Cuomos, and said, basically, I don't want to hear from you anymore. And then he goes after Trump. Just watch for this, because just don't be used by this. Understand that this is a tactic. I mean, Donald Trump should not be sparring with mayor of New York City when he gets the job. If anything else, if things go bad, you could bring it up. But now he's trying to alienate President Trump, or he's trying to build it up to a big White House visit. Trump will take him. Trump would absolutely let him come and see him. But I think there's a real danger. Now I think that Schumer does not run for re-election. Nancy Pelosi says she's not running for re-election. Steny Hoyer will probably be next. He's about 88, I think. He's not running for re-election. He wanted to be Speaker, and Nancy Pelosi beat him out. And now we're in the middle of a lockout, and the people that are supposed to land the plane have made their name by being irrational and militant, like the whole squad. You know that. But Jonathan Carl still thinks the shutdown's going to end. Cut 12.
I think we're getting closer. I mean, what I'm hearing is you have Democrats who are eager to move beyond this and are moving closer towards accepting what John Thune actually offered more than a month ago, the idea of you know, they vote for an extension of government funding and they get a promise on these Obamacare subsidy extensions. It's not going to be everybody. You played Senator Blumenthal. He's not going to be there, but they only need eight of them. It won't be eight. It'll be more than that. You can't have every single one of them be the determining vote. But my sense is that they're getting closer.
Maybe, but today there's going to be a vote shortly. And the vote that John Thune is putting out there is guarantee a future vote on Obamacare subsidies, extend the CR all the way through January, failed 14 times prior, pay everybody in agriculture, pay the VA, pay the military. We'll see if they're going to go for that. Now, originally, everyone said, okay, this is the original offer. This is probably good, considering it's already been the longest lockout ever. But now the big sentiment is Democrats feel they're benefiting from your pain. They feel that they're benefiting, that you can't fly. They think you're benefiting, that you can't get paid. They think they're benefiting, that you can't make ends meet or make but do your rent. Here's Akeem Jeffries, cut three.
John Thune is divorced from reality. I mean, it's a clown show over in the Senate. 14, 15 times, you bring the same partisan Republican spending bill to the Senate floor, expecting a different result. That's the classic definition of legislative insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over again, has no ability to actually negotiate in good faith. And this has gone on week after week after week.
Number one, what he just said is totally inaccurate. What Thune is mentioning is different, number one. Number two is, it's the same spending bill. It's the same budget, your budget, made up by your president, Joe Biden, to continue to fund the government while you negotiate your 2026 budget, which eventually you're going to have to do. But now it's been 38 days. That's an all-time record. People listening to me right now, if they have to fly, they're saying it's 50-50, a coin toss. Because Sean Duffy said they're going to cut back flights 4% until it gets up to 10%, and let's hope it's over by then. You know how much money the airlines is losing? Incredible. Hey, make sure you watch One Nation this weekend. We have Jim Farley, CEO of Ford. We got Michael Rowe. We got Pierce Morgan amongst my guests and Senator Dave McCormick covering all the big issues. And don't forget, I want to see you in on Valentine's Day in 2026 in Fort Myers, New York. History, Liberty, and Laughs. BrianKilmeade.com.